By all indications, the ANC's leadership succession race is well underway. This week on the Politics Weekly, we'll assess the likely effectiveness of the party's new campaign rules, which on the surface seek to improve the quality of its leadership. We'll also look at the leadership candidates that have emerged so far. And for our conversation, this time we're joined by Mawande Amashabalala, who's the Sunday Times politics writer, as well as political analyst Dr. Ntsikele Law Breakfast.
With immediate effect.
When people resolve.
And I quote, in 2 years' time, Eskom's problems will be a thing of the past. People won't even remember load shedding. Unquote.
They put saliva on the paper.
I'm in charge. That's why these fools are running around here. I'm in charge.
And then they share that zone.
Point of order, Chairperson.
Order, Chairperson.
Point of order, ruling party by point of order.
Must step aside within 30 days.
No, I'm not going to apologize.
He has no brains whatsoever.
So the ANC president was sabotaged again yesterday?
Well, sabotage, that can be
this
determined.
This is not a shit.
Hey, welcome to the both of you.
Thanks, Promek.
Thank you very much for having me.
Hey, Mawande, let's start with you. Starting off with these new rules, what are the salient elements of the new rules?
Yes. Well, look, Promak, as you said in your intro, the intention here is in fact the new rules themselves are part of what the ANC has termed the renewal of the organization, as it were, in terms of moving away from, unethical or immoral practices that they think had, filtered into the party in the previous years. And among the points, you would remember that there was a whole brouhaha around issues of funding after the 2017 NASRAC conference, where it became apparent that the ANC doesn't actually have rules of how individual candidates who want to contest for internal position must raise funds. So as part of these rules in that regard is that all candidates will have to declare and account for every cent they have raised and how they have spent it in terms of campaigning. Yes, I see a discrepancy though in that personally is that it doesn't say much about whether you are limited to raising money to whatever level and you can't go beyond this, and also how do you make it competitive if one is liked more by donors and the other doesn't necessarily have donors. It's still an unfair game, but the intention is to create a fair contest. That's okay. just
for clarity, this would not apply to all ANC members. It applies to what? To the top six, it applies to NEC, or does it apply across the board?
It applies across the board for everyone who will be contesting those 86 positions of the NEC. If you contested and as part of your contestation or campaigning towards the conference itself, you raised some funds, you transported people, you went to address a cadres forum, those kind of things, those costs that you incurred in those processes, in those campaigning processes, mm-hmm. you must be able to account at the end of the day as to where you got the money, how you spent it. Do you have proof for such? And then if, of course, you can explain some monies, then it will create some problems for you in terms of the electoral committee itself that is led by former deputy president of the ANC, Khadima Motlanthe.
But does it apply, for example, to provincial contests?
Well, for now, it doesn't.
It's confined
for now. But of course, if the rules themselves are affirmed by the December conference, they will continue to apply beyond. Remember, they were only adopted by the NEC now late in July, which was way past most of the provincial conferences. In fact, there's just one or two left now. So, and I'm not sure if it will apply to them though, because I think the implementation is envisaged to apply to the national conference and beyond, depending on whether conference adopts. Because I think the other challenge, Bramaik, is going to be, does conference affirm these rules or does it reject it? Because remember, one of the first items of conference is what is called adoption of the rules and guidelines of the conference itself. And as part of adoption of the rules, branches may raise concern and say the electoral bilateral commission rules that were applied coming here, we don't feel that they are working because of 1-2-3. And if the majority says we agree, they may well be discarded and we may be back to square one.
Mm-hmm. So this seeks to address money. Mm-hmm. What other elements are the rules trying to address?
They are also seeking to address the issue of factionalism. For instance, the rules say no one is allowed to formulate slates formally. You know, ANC in recent years, the issue of slates has become a part and parcel of the culture, but the rules say no such thing should be done. For instance, there shouldn't be T-shirts that print a name or slogan of a particular faction. There shouldn't be, you know, campaigning along factional lines. For instance, you can't say, because I support, for instance, and just make an example, President Cyril Ramaphosa, therefore I support these ones under him. It can't be an automatic. Every leader, it says, must be supported based on individual assessment of those leaders. So it in essence, such that you can support people from different school of thoughts. But as to whether that too is practical is another story altogether. But that is what the rules seek to achieve.
No, I'm just asking because coming out of the weekend in Etegwin already, I saw the region there proposing Zwelin Mkhize and Paul Mashatile.
Exactly.
Isn't that a slate type thing?
In fact, right.
Candidates like that.
You are being mild because what has been happening throughout even the other provinces that have pronounced, you are beginning to see a formulation of a particular slate, for instance, there are certain individuals, let me take an example of Gauteng and Limpopo, both almost endorse the same people. That is slate. That is a slate. Two provinces support the same slate. So, as I say, it's a wish list by the Electoral Commission. As I said, implementation is a different story altogether. Okay. Because how do you then determine that this is a slate and this is a fact sheet? If people say this happened haphazardly, but we know that there's no such a thing. Yeah. Policies that happen haphazardly. These things are planned somewhere in the background such that when they come to the front, you know.
Okay, so we spoke about the money, we spoke about factionalism and slates. Mm-hmm. What else? What about the character of people being, who want to stand as candidates?
Yes. Then at that level of the individuals, I think it also seeks to create what we may term the new cadre in the ANC, which has been a long-standing conversation. Would remember from 1997 already when President Mandela was the outgoing president at the time, addressed these issues of the ANC having, attracted the wrong characters. Former President Begay of the ANC as well, throughout his terms, it's one of the issues he has felt passionate about. In fact, he still speaks about it to this day. So I think the ANC in accelerating that process to give birth to this new cadre who is a person of integrity, who has a good standing in society, they have sort of extended from the step aside rule, which we have seen it affecting people like Esma Khashule, who eventually got suspended, into these rules themselves. For instance, the rules say now you cannot nominate a leader, one who has, who is undergoing, court process, who has been charged in a court process for serious crimes. Serious crime definition, they say it is any, charge that may result to a jail sentence that is over 6 months, I think. And then it also talks to, you cannot nominate leaders that have been charged internally, for instance, by the disciplinary committee of the ANC itself, even if their cases are not concluded, or those whose cases went to the integrity committee and they were concluded and the recommendation was one of suspension or that leader stepping aside. But then again, the implementation is another question. For instance, on the latter point I made of leaders who have been processed by the integrity committee but cannot and were recommended to be suspended. Zwelin Mkhize, who just yesterday was nominated by the Etegwin region, last year was recommended by the integrity committee of the ANC for suspension from the NEC for his alleged involvement in Digital Vibes saga that is well known by everyone. But already we have him being nominated by branches in Etegwin. So again, the question of implementation or this just being another talk shop becomes a critical one.
Dr. Breakfast, I'd like for you to come in here Part of, as I understand it, part of the transformation or renewal, you know, of the ANC relates to gender representation. And it's a thing that has been, a conversation that's been going on in the ANC for the longest time, you know, as to how, as to why women seem to be underrepresented, especially in the critical positions, you know, of president, deputy president, etc. So far, I am not seeing a spirited effort by the organization to make sure that women actually do rise to the top, or basically that the impediments that normally prevent that are removed. You know, I'm looking at some of the names that have come up. Mawande has got a long list of them, as long as his arm. But I'm not seeing, particularly when you're talking president, deputy president, and so on, I'm not seeing even a single woman being endorsed. What does that tell us about the campaign so far?
Yeah, so the issue of transformation lies at the heart of the ANC's ideology, which is the NDR, the National Democratic Revolution, which is a two-stage theory. When we're talking about transformation, we're talking about a multidimensional concept, not only one aspect. So the program of the ANC, which is the NDR, says that there's got to be a time whereby, you know, the revolution is led by the bourgeoisie class, while the working class is being made ready to take over. But that struggle, among other things, also includes the plight of women, because the ANC subscribes to this notion that oppression during the epoch of apartheid and colonialism was basically against women, the working class, and also other social categories. So the past is still with us because women are still on the back foot on matters of leadership. But the challenge is that when ANC is holding its conferences, we only see one woman co-opted, maybe as a deputy secretary, not as a chairperson or as a secretary. So that has been one of the gaps in the ANC. So I think the rules are trying to bridge that gap at the moment, because women are falling short of occupying strategic positions. No wonder one might argue that a name like Dr. Nkosazana Zuma has been mentioned as a presidential contender. But, and it's a big but, you know, there's something that I call femocracy. Femocracy is when you are parachuting women into senior positions, but behind closed doors, you are pulling the strings in order to reproduce political power for men. That is a function of factionalism. So what I'm saying is that it doesn't mean that because women are parachuted into senior positions, transformation is being promoted. Sometimes women, even themselves, not all the time, they are being used in pursuit of entrenching patriarchy as opposed to the promotion of transformation. So what I'm saying is that we need to be open-minded. We're not teasing out the issue of transformation. And by transformation, I'm talking about to alter the social order by promoting, I would say, the inclusion of women, and also by changing, you know, the values of society.
With my layperson's understanding of these complications that you and Mawande understand better, would it not be reasonable for the public to expect to say, you know, to say the ANC must set the example in bringing about that social change in the way people think and in the way people make choices, particularly in terms the symbolism? If, for example, the ANC were ANC leaders, let me say ANC male leaders, you know, say someone like Cyril Ramaphosa or Zweli Mkhize or Paul Mashatile were to say, look, even if the branches nominate me, I think that I'm happy to stand back for a female comrade. Well, how is this going to change if the males are always ready to accept, you know, to listen to the branches?
Yeah, in theory, the ANC says that it is the leader of society. So that denotes that it needs to lead by example. But the ANC is an institution or an organization which is constituted by individuals. Now, the challenge is that, you know, politics, in my opinion, is about entrenching hegemony, which is dominance. Politics about imposing your agenda on your opponents or people that you are competing with. And because of that, I don't see it coming that presidential contenders will back off and make a way for other people that they're competing with. That is just a pie in the sky. Because in the domain of politics, you need power. Politics have a power. Why do you need power? Because without power, you cannot operationalize your ideas. No wonder, you know, people want to ascend to power because the assumption is that if you ascend to the helm of power in the ANC, then you are able to potentially ascend to the helm of state power, you know, then bring about the change that you want to see. So on that score, I don't see it coming that the male presidential contenders will back off and make a way for female contenders.
Maunda, what do you think? Do you think that it's not possible, feasible, for an organization to make that call?
Well, yeah, but like if we lived in a perfect world, it would definitely be possible. But in the one where we live, I mean, besides, probably those could be possible during apartheid because, as Dr. Brevis is saying, at the time there was nothing to compete for. You know, it was internally within the ANC, you were just competing for positions, but those positions didn't give you anything.
Didn't come with money.
You know, they didn't come with
the blue lights
you know.
Whatever, yeah.
But this day, the benefits that come with you being elected into those offices, there is no way that Cyril would, you know, surrender the presidential protection unit with 20 plus cars for another person and go back to driving himself. It just doesn't, you know, look possible to happen, you know, because at also at the core of politics, besides the power that, you know, Dr. Professor is talking about, this is also about self, you know, advancement, be it economically.
Is it not about saving the people and saving the country?
Ah, well, those are just, that is the theory, you know, to get to where you want to be. But at the core of politicians are all about themselves, realistically speaking, about their advancement and advancement of their families and their friends, economically, socially, and otherwise within society itself.
Yeah. Mm. Here's another, you know, thought. Dr. Breakfast, the just in terms of the run-up to December, but also how the ANC organizes those procedures and processes. The idea, you know, I've been hearing in the conversation about about KZN in particular. Mm-hmm. I've been hearing people saying, no. It's important that KwaZulu-Natal doesn't make the same mistake like the last time, you know, at Nasrec. They must make sure that they have their own person in the top six. Isn't that regionalism and almost tribalism? Why does the ANC allow or promote or encourage organization? What should be ideological and political positions? Why do they allow them to descend into regional and almost tribal positions and mobilizing along those lines?
Yeah, first of all, I think that maybe KZN was speaking on behalf of itself. And as a province, it is entitled to hold the view that it has articulated in terms of influencing the strategic direction of the ANC. And after all, the ANC, the contested terrain. But of course, if you advance a line of argument along those lines, you are running a risk of, you know, tapping into the space of tribalism, geopolitics, something which poses a serious threat to the stability, not only of the ANC, but also the stability of a society. In fact, I mean, tribalism is a form of oppression. So I think as an organization, the ANC needs to be circumspect or cautious in terms of how it maneuvers around the issue of geopolitics or tribalism. Maybe they should never have said that, but, you know, maneuver behind closed doors. There's nothing wrong in them lobbying for certain positions, but I think they just need to make sure that they don't put a great deal of emphasis on ethnicity.
Mm. Mawande, it seems to me that if you are all in one organization and this organization has got certain beliefs, and because you are in there because you've got certain core beliefs that you know, whether it's the Freedom Charter or NDR or whatever, you know, however one defines that, the presumption might be that you are in the ANC because you are agreed on certain fundamental principles. Now, if you have a province pushing a particular candidate because of it is a province, does it not fly against that? You know, that it's almost as if you're saying KZN wants its own person, or Northwest wants its own person, or Gauteng wants its own person because it's got separate interests from the other provinces. Almost like every province has got its own things that it's fighting for in the ANC.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bramaik, basically the ANC is a serial offender in the saying that you speak left but you walk right. KZN is not the only guilty party in this regard, in terms of regionalism or tribalism, depending on how you look at it. Limpopo, which was the first to endorse a full or almost full top six preference. They nominated the current president, Cyril Ramaphosa, for president, Paul Mashatile for deputy president, Stan Matabata for national chair, which was the fourth one. I forgot the fourth one. But on those four that they nominated were basically what we'll call, I call them the North.
Mm-hmm.
It's people with Limpopo links, but some of them mm-hmm. who have settled in Gauteng, they would by a tribe be either Pedi, Tsonga mm-hmm. or Venda.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that because this is where the majority of people who belong to those particular tribes reside.
Mm.
You go to the Eastern Cape, which has not come out full, but we know what is their preference, for instance, for a position like a deputy president. They want Oscar Mabuyane as a deputy president. Oscar Mabuyane is currently their premier, is a person from the Eastern Cape. KZN, we have spoken about them. It's emerging as a trend. In Mpumalanga, they've nominated Ronald Lamura for deputy president. That's where he comes from in terms of his mm-hmm. ancestral home. So it is becoming a cancer that is spreading. It's sort of, we are going back to the dark old days of these things. In fact, we are heading towards being like the rest of the African continent, where you even see it at a level of national elections, where there are contests of presidential elections. You would see a particular tribe supporting a candidate who comes from that tribe. Another tribe supports a tribe. I think we are going back to those politics, but ANC somehow had managed for the longest time to run away from that kind of arrangement. But if they are not careful with what we see emerging in these nomination processes going forward, it looks like we might be handed that wrong and dangerous direction.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one idea that has been flighted is of one member, one vote.
Yeah, which was...
Could that work? Or do you think that the people who are, who call the shots in the ANC will agree to that?
I don't think so, Bramaik. And the reason this proposal, by the way, was raised by Oscar Mabuyane in 2017 already, but it didn't catch fire at the Nazareth conference. It is highly unlikely that it will ever catch fire, Bramaik, because, for instance, for argument's sake, the ANC has 1 million card-carrying members. When you say a member, a vote, it means all 1 million of them must vote. It is very difficult to manipulate such a process. It is very difficult to gatekeep. It is very difficult to vote by in such a situation. Because, for instance, let's argue and say you 10 rand per member. That's at 1 million. That's just something. Already you are looking at almost a billion. So it is something that I don't think many would agree. They would rather continue with the current arrangement of 4,500 to 5,000 voting delegates, which is very, very easy to manipulate and is not actually a true reflection of democracy. The call for a member by vote is democracy in its rawest form. because what happens in the current arrangement is that even if the delegate from a particular branch has been given a mandate that these are the people we must vote for because we believe that they represent our aspirations in this branch, which are 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4. When they get to the conference itself, the delegate mingles with other delegates, gets influence, gets bought KFC, sleeps in nice hotels, drives in nice Mercedes vans, you know, and all that. All of a sudden, the mandate they were given of their branch goes off the window, and they start voting according to what is popular culture at the conference itself. Is that true democracy? I don't think so. Whereas if it's every member voting with their conscience without being influenced by anyone, even if they were influenced, it's their baby to nurse, but they were given their democratic right to make a choice of the kind of leaders they want to be led by. So I think it's a sane proposal, but I just don't see it ever gaining traction in the current ANC, as it were.
Dr. Prefas, the other thing is that we see provinces, branches, regions nominating and endorsing people. In all honesty, do they know what these candidates actually stand for? In other words, when they choose, what are they choosing? You know, do they choose the person who can sing the loudest, or who can make jokes, or dance, or do they choose because they agree with the thinking and ideology or the aims of the particular candidate?
First of all, the ANC subscribes to what I call a Marxist and Leninist organizational model, which demands party discipline. That's why ANC members, sometimes they are expected to abide by the popular view, or they are expected to stick to the principle of democratic centralism. So that's the nature and the character of the ANC. Secondly, the ANC says that its strength lies at branch level. They say that amandla asemasebenzi. So the branches are the ones that are expected to debate the qualities of their preferred candidates on matters of leadership, whether those people have been tried and tested, they understand what the organization stands for, they can advance the agenda of the organization. But that is in theory. In practice, I think there is what I call the capturing of branches, because he who pays the piper, I think even Mawanda pointed out this earlier on, he who pays the piper calls the tune. There is this thing of vote buying. Some branches are co-opted, they are bought, you know, and people get a mandate, and at the last minute, they betray the aspirations of their own branch members in pursuit of personal accumulation to amass wealth. So those are some of the contradictions of the ANC. No wonder there have been these rules to try to regulate the organizational behavior of the ANC, or the behavior of delegates. But the key question is, these rules are enforceable.
But do the members know who they are voting for in reality? In terms of, for example, if I vote for candidate X, and I say Tina as a branch or as a regional or however we're making the whichever level we're making the call at, how do we know what we're choosing and what this person is going to do once they become president, for example?
So the ANC is a contested terrain. Different classes expect different things from the presidential contender, for argument's sake. But the reality is that politics is controlled by the economy. You know, people who have a strong financial muscle, I think they are the ones that are on good footing in terms of influencing a possible presidential contender. I mean, there has never been anyone who has ever ascended to the helm of power as a president of the ANC without getting a backing of capital. And I think that is still going to be the case, despite the fact that there are these rules, because it will not be easy to enforce them. In terms of choosing a presidential contender, I think those who've got money are in a better position to influence that debate. Not to say that branches cannot take part in that discussion, in particular, the rank and file.
Mm. Mawande, yeah, you've been wanting to come in on the thing, so yeah. I'm going to give the last word to you before we wrap up.
All right. No, Bramike, what I wanted to add is to say perhaps this goes back to the debate that I say most ANC leaders have been harping on about, but they are not doing anything about it. The quality of the ANC member itself. Can the average ANC member, Bramike, comprehend with the simple political issues? Can they comprehend? Do they know what is the economy that Dr. Breakfast is talking about? What drives it? Who are the forces behind the economy? What is the participation of the average man in the economy itself? What is it that they can do through politics to influence the direction of the economic path of the country? Do average ANC members understand those questions? I guess that is where the question lies, which would inform then the question of whether or not do they know the kind of leaders they need, and do they elect those people that they need, or it is just, as I personally believe, a popularity contest is about how many times you've appeared on TV, what slogans that are attractive do you shout the most, how stylish is your campaign, how attractive it is in the popular culture, you know, among the young people in this age on social media as well. Those are the factors that end up propelling one, besides the money issue, to victory, instead of the fundamental question which speaks to the quality of the average ANC member. Are they informed enough about the most basic of issues in the political world?
Mm-hmm.
That is the question.
And do you think that the new regulations or the new guidelines or the new policy for electing leaders will give us a different outcome in December than we would have had in 2017 at NASREC?
In fact, Bramike, these new rules completely follow up or fail to address this particular question that I spoke about. And I feel anything that doesn't address that is just wishful thinking. Because if you don't address the basic, component of what forms an organization, which are its members, then I doubt. I think the ANC has to revisit its entire membership process. There's the whole talk that has been there before, better. So do you still go on to have as many members as possible, or do you want, even if you have 10,000 members countrywide, but who are of quality, who have special skills or special contributions to make within the ideological direction and just the content of the party itself, what do you do to get to that? I think the better but few argument comes in here, because in reality, most of these members, to answer my same question, I just don't think they are informed enough to understand these issues, some of them which are complex, but even the most basic of these issues.
Hey, Dr. Breakfast, just lastly, do you think that at the end of the conference in December, we'll see a new, renewed, rejuvenated ANC, or we're going to get more of the same?
Of course not. I mean, throughout history, the ANC has had ups and downs. I mean, even during the time of Oliver Tambo in 1969 at the Morogoro conference. Remember, the ANC had two conferences while in exile. There were issues. That's why they held that conference. The people were demanding that Oliver Tambo even must be changed. But the difference between then and now is that those debates had to do with the ideological direction of the organization, as opposed to the way things are at the moment. And I want to argue that the way things are is not the way things should be, because the conflicts that have broken out have nothing to do with the ideological direction of the ANC, have to do with who stands a chance to benefit from material gains. So the struggle now is about having access to political power. Why? Political power gives you access to public office, and public office gives you access to economic resources. And economic resources, they give you access to a good life.
Yeah. On that not so inspiring note,
yeah, that sounded very depressing.
We've had so much talk about renewal and what are the terms on?
You know,
the NC is going to be renewed and this and all. And if we're going to come out with same old, you know, in December after being subjected, you know, to the spectacle, you know, of campaigning, yeah, it's going to be very disappointing for a lot of us, you know. But I think we should wrap it there because we've just about run out of time. I'd like to thank our guests for today's conversation, a political analyst, Dr. Ntsikelelo Breakfast, as well as Mawanda Mashabalala, who's the Sunday Times politics writer. Thank you both for your time. I appreciate
thank
your
you
insights.
Thanks
for Mike. Sure.
I'm Mike Siluma. Until next time, do stay safe, stay blessed, and do good for our country. We'll be right back.